Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us again this week. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My guest this week is Scott Stevens. Scott has a book out called Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud, Relapse and the Symptoms of Sobriety. We're going to be talking to Scott about his book. This, of course, a problem that so many of us have had to deal with. And we'll have Scott Stevens on right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Would you send me some mail? MathersRodney at yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Scott Stevens. Scott has a book out called Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud, Relapse and the Symptoms of Sobriety. The book is award-winning and provides hope for alcoholics. We like hope around here. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hi, Rodney. Good to hear from you today.
One of the things I noticed just immediately as I was looking at some of your material here is that you said that the Affordable Care Act is going to make alcohol abuse everybody's business. I was just wondering what you meant. What is that all about?
Well, frankly, today, even, and going back before the Affordable Care Act, it really is everyone's business when you consider that the annual cost for alcohol-related incarcerations, alcohol-related health care costs, lost productivity, that escalates to over $220 billion a year. Somewhere along the line, every one of us has a piece of that $220 billion, whether we're drinkers, ex-drinkers, or completely sober our entire lives. Everybody right. has to bear that cost. Now, with the Affordable Care Act, what happens is a couple of things. First of all, there are more people that are sharing the insurance pool along with you, people mm-hmm. who had been outside of the insurance world for a long time. And what that means is a lot of people who have alcohol or alcohol-related issues.
Right.
The second part of the Affordable Care Act is, and it's good news, it's called parity, where there is an exact or a duplicate limit within insurance now that mental health and especially addiction coverage is covered at the same levels as surgical coverage. So we don't have this false ceiling in there saying that, oh, you can only have addiction coverage or treatment coverage up to a certain dollar amount. No, it's the same maximum under parity as surgical coverage. So more people will have access to the kind of treatment that is successful in keeping diseases like alcoholism at bay, and that's really encouraging news. But what this means for everybody is we've all got skin in the game. There is, you know, this touches about 8% of the population has the disease of alcoholism, but so many more just family members, but beyond that into the community, taxpayers, etc., are all involved in what is really kind of a quiet epidemic within the United States.
Mm-hmm. And it's been my experience, people that I know, their options for getting treated are 12 steps, for free, you know, and there's nothing beyond that. I'm not saying that the 12 step is bad, but, or not effective. It's very effective, but that's been their only option. Scott, let's back up just a little bit. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing about this sort of thing. Tell us a little bit about Scott.
Sure. Appreciate that, Rodney. Where I started with my journey with alcohol was at age 14. I experimented with it. And had I known then what I know now, it probably should have been a big old red flag, because a couple of us had a six pack and, you know, three 14-year-old boys and six beers. But the other two had a couple of beers and they're all loopy. And me, I had two beers and I was like, where's the next one? My tolerance, the way my body processed alcohol was different than the other guys. Mm-hmm. But I didn't drink much through high school and college, and then later on in my career, I was in the mutual fund industry, had a lot of stress, etc. Who doesn't have stress, really? It's
right.
But I started drinking, and suddenly I couldn't stop. Where once alcohol was my friend, it was my stress reliever, my relaxation after a round of golf, all of a sudden alcohol betrayed me. I couldn't quit. Mm-hmm. I decided that I would do things my way, and I'd taper off, and that didn't work, so I decided I'm going to become a maintenance drinker. There's no such thing as a functional alcoholic, because none of us are functional, okay? We're getting mm-hmm. by. Mm-hmm. But I was working in a high-profile, high-visibility position, but I was drinking 2 liters of alcohol, 2 liters of Jack Daniels a day, just to keep from withdrawing. And that's waking up in the morning, having a couple sips here and there throughout the day, and, you know, it the volume just escalated exponentially. And then I got into some legal trouble. I got arrested for OWIs in 6 weeks. Everything all of a sudden caught up with me, and it was time to make a lifestyle change. And aside from the legal trouble, I almost died 3 times, twice because of the amount of alcohol in my body, and once almost from alcohol withdrawal, because this is one of the only drugs that in withdrawal it can kill you as much as it can putting it in you. So all this is behind me now. I like to focus on the positive these days, and what brought me to writing is especially my recent book on relapse, Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud, is I've relapsed, not recently, I've been sober quite a while now, but when I relapsed, I struggled with, why is this happening to me? Why am I going back to the same misery? And it's the same questions that the people around me were asking. So my first passion, what I went to college for, both of my degrees are in journalism. So I began to write news articles about alcohol and the effects on the body, not just in alcoholics or people with drinking problems, but also for the so-called normal people, non-alcoholics. And then that led into, in addition to doing my journalism, writing the two books that I have, and they've been very well received by not just the drinkers or wannabe ex-drinkers, but also by the families around them who are just kind of scratching their heads saying, what's going on with this person?
Yeah, the story is a familiar one to people who listen to this show, and this show is geared toward ex-offenders, and there are a lot of ex-offenders that struggle with alcoholism throughout their life, and when they come home, life is hard, and it's easy to relapse. That's what I see happen a lot. And so, you know, this whole idea of trying to keep from relapsing is something that I'm really interested in. One of the things you talk about is treatment versus mistreatment. What are you talking about there? What is the difference there?
Well, the key thing in treatment is getting a proper assessment. When we are in the criminal justice system, there's a cursory evaluation of what our needs are, but it's a one-size-fits-all program. And within the correction system behind bars, you're getting treated as they want to treat you, not as you need the treatment. And we're all individuals. We have different stressors, age-wise, career-wise, education-wise, family-wise, etc. So a treatment program is designed for the person. A mistreatment program is to put a number on you and cram you through the system. Where, as an ex-offender, what I've found in my own recovery is that the more I've participated in self-help type of groups, whether it's Men for Sobriety, Smart Recovery, 12 Steps, etc., mm-hmm. is that the more I'm a participant in my treatment rather than having it pushed at me, then the more successful I've been in maintaining my sobriety.
Mm-hmm. Because it's your choice.
Right.
I think that has a lot to do with it as well. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, more with Scott Stevens. We're talking about alcoholism, how to keep from relapsing, and Scott's excellent book here. We're going to be right back after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey y'all, have you picked up my new album? You can catch it on iTunes, Rhapsody, Google Play, Amazon. It's on all those services. So, you know what? The thing costs like $1.50. So, go on there and listen to the samples. If it's something that you like, get you a copy. It's Resurrecting Rodney. Check it out. And welcome back. We're talking to Scott Stevens. Scott's got a book called Silver Lining Has a, Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud, Relapse and the Symptoms of Sobriety. Scott, what are the symptoms of relapse? How do you know that someone's getting ready to relapse or you're getting ready to do it yourself? How do you know that?
One of the pieces of research that I came across that led to this book is that our biochemically alcoholics are different than non-alcoholics. We know about the serotonin and dopamine thing, but there's also this stress hormone called cortisol, and naturally occurring in every human being, but in alcoholics we have a higher level of this stress hormone. And what it does is it has very definite symptoms that it's getting out of control. Non-alcoholics and alcoholics alike drink for the same reason, to relieve stress. And if we're mindful that our stress levels are getting out of control, we're less likely to get into the danger of going back to the alcohol, because whether we're facing corrections consequences for drinking or just physical or family or the overall consequences of the disease of alcoholism, we can't pick up that first drink. So when cortisol gets out of control, there are seven very definite symptoms that I point out in Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud. The first, of course, is neglecting your sleep or rest or your eating. When you start to let those things slide, it's an indication that your cortisol level is too high. And then poor memory recall. Got to tell you, Rodney, this one is the one that nails me all the time. When I have trouble remembering stuff, and I take a certain amount of pride in having a really solid memory, but when things get a little sketchy around the edges or I forget stuff, that's a good sign that cortisol is out of control, because what it does is it affects the synapses in your brain. It throws your biochemistry off in your brain. Mm-hmm. So in your memory centers, you're not exactly efficient. Confusion and lack of clear thinking is the third one. The fourth is emotional sensitivity. Your substitution cravings. If I'm hitting the chocolate extra heavy, why am I doing that? Because there's a stressor in me that the chocolate makes me feel good. Well, if things are making me feel good, why am I, you know, I'm flirting with going back to alcohol, because that's what I'm thinking or what my body is craving. And then isolation is the sixth one. Hyper alertness or being easily startled is the seventh one. And I've been through that one too, experienced that firsthand as well, where I live a pretty quiet life, pretty quiet household, and someone could walk into the room and just say, hi, how are you doing? And I'll hit the ceiling as if a shot went off behind me because I am hyper alert and easily startled. And that is a result of having too much cortisol, because cortisol is produced by the adrenal glands. What we also know comes out of the adrenal glands is adrenaline. They're very closely related, and when you got too much of it, then your body gives you these symptoms. When you get these symptoms, you need to pay attention to your sobriety and your program, or you know, face the danger or the potential of relapse.
Okay, excellent information. So, Scott, I guess the next logical question would be, so what do you do to fight off the stressors without leaning on that addiction? What are some of the things that you do, Scott, to keep from relapsing?
In talking to ex-offenders and the other people who haven't had the misfortune of inviting corrections into their lives, I've discovered four stressors that are common across the board with people who are struggling with relapse and struggling with stress, and those are grief, guilt, shame, and forgiveness. And I want to focus particularly today on the idea of shame, because there's a lot of stigma around there about alcoholism in general, that people who have it are bad, they have some kind of moral failing, or they're losers because they can't, I can quit drinking, why can't they? And the other part that we face as ex-offenders is there's also a great deal of stigma around being an ex-offender. You've been incarcerated because you're the bad guy. Well, we're all trying to change our lives. So the acceptance of ex-offenders and the acceptance of alcohol, alcohol-related illnesses is pretty low in the general population. So we face a lot of stigma. We face a lot of shame. But the way around that, and the key, one of the key cornerstones of my recovery, is knowing that I'm not alone. That there are your listeners and a bunch of them who felt the same way. Well, if we get together and we talk about this, if we have a discussion, because our tendency is to not discuss it, to let the shame build up, and you drink over the shame, and first of all, you just proven all those people right that you can't manage your disease, and second of all, you've just created more guilt for yourself over drinking, and then that perpetuates this whole cycle of feeling bad, drinking over it, and then you're off to the races, right back to where you were, whether you're doing things that are violation of the law, violation of your probation, or just a violation of the value you put on sobriety. So where we deal with shame best is in a group of people who are experiencing the same thing. I thought for the longest time that, man, I've been locked up. I am the alcoholic I didn't want to be, and look at the garbage I've done. But you know what? Just because I am the alcoholic that I didn't want to be, there are other guys we're feeling the same way if we talk. And I've started recently the only Men for Sobriety group in the United States. I hope to see more of them, but it's an opportunity for men to get together and talk about their what they're experiencing, what they're feeling, and also to focus on the positive stuff. And part of talking in a group, whether it's a 12-step group or, you know, any of these other free resources that we have in the community through Celebrate Recovery, Smart Recovery, or other self-help groups, is to be assertive, to know that, okay, I'm here, I'm sitting in a chair, but that's not how any of this works. We have to be assertive, to talk, to open that mouth and let out, because there is some, you know, there's a lot of therapeutic value, but it's also very cathartic to hear what you're experiencing come out of your mouth in your own voice. Say, man, you know, the the other people will give you a reality check, but you're also giving yourself a reality check at that point. And I talk quite a bit in Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud about, you know, different types, different formats of different meetings, but, you know, that's one key component of handling this one of these four stressors, the shame, the stigma, mm-hmm. is to talk about it rather than bottling it up.
Excellent. Okay. There are a lot of things I'd like to get to here. We're getting close on time. I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface. But one of the things that you mentioned is a link between alcoholism and cancer. And I wanted mm-hmm. to ask you about that. Tell us about that.
Alcohol is a carcinogen. It's mind-boggling when you consider all the things that the FDA monitors and keeps an eye on, what we've gone through with tobacco being a carcinogen and all the things in tobacco smoke being carcinogenic. Well, alcohol is a carcinogen, been recognized as one since the 1940s, and it is the only dietary link that has ever been proven to an increased risk of breast cancer in females, but it also has a very definite link to esophageal, cancers of the tongue, pancreas, larynx. About seven different cancers are all connected, have a direct connection to alcohol consumption. Last year, when I was doing some reporting, I came across a report from a group of oncologists that said, when it comes to alcohol, no amount is safe. Now, that includes moderate drinking with people who have no experience with alcoholism. This is everybody. This isn't just an alcoholics problem. This is your casual drinker or your so-called social drinker that has exposed himself to a carcinogen. And as a result, we run an increased risk of these seven different types of cancer. And, in fact, more than 60 other diseases either have a causal or secondary connection to alcohol consumption. So this really is unhealthy stuff. There are observational reports that say it's good for your cardiovascular system, but that's purely observational data. The evidence-based scientific lab stuff that they've done has proven, without a doubt, the connection, the good science has proven a connection between alcohol and all these different diseases, including cancer. So even in moderation, it's not a good thing to be dumping in your body.
But you
never
always,
mind the fact, Scott, never mind the fact that as alcoholics, we shouldn't be doing it anyway.
We always hear, you know, that it seems like I've heard my whole life that a glass of wine a day is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like that's kind of like, you know, an apple a day keeps the doctor away kind of thing. But I guess what I hear you saying is that it's not. And I wonder, this stuff that you're saying, I thought I was pretty well read. I didn't know any of this. I've never heard this before. You know, we all know that alcohol can play havoc with your liver and so forth. And I've known people that have had problems because of drinking with their liver and so forth. But this is new information for me. This is interesting. And so the old adage about a glass of wine a day, you would say, no, not so fast, right?
Wishful thinking. because, you know, of course we want to be able to justify or rationalize things and say, well, you know, I read this report. And the difference between observational reporting is I have 20 patients and they all drink wine and their heart condition is better, so I'm going to make the connection between their wine drinking of two glasses a day to better heart condition. The actual lab, the evidence-based data says, not so fast, guys.
Yeah.
There are so many other health consequences, and in fact, the alcohol elevates your blood pressure levels, so it can't be improving your cardiovascular health while at the same time increasing one of the risks for heart attack, can it? So the evidence base kind of trumps anything that's done on an observational basis. And another problem with the observational data is there isn't a further drill down upon the people within that group. Generally, wine drinkers are living a healthier lifestyle than the Jack Daniel drinker like myself. You know, they're more apt to go to a gym, more apt to have better financial resources, and as a result of having better financial all of this ties into the makeup of this universe of wine drinkers versus just saying people who drink wine versus people who drink beer or Jack Daniels. It's a different universe. So you have to take into account all those other impacts in their overall health, not just the fact that they're drinking wine.
Very interesting. I wish we had some more time, Scott. Stevens is here with us. The book is called Every Silver Lining Has a Cloud, Relapse, and the Symptoms of Sobriety. Where do we get the book, Scott?
I have a website out there, Rodney. It's cool. www.alcoholicist.com. But the book is available in ebook, in paperback, and in hardcover on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, any of the online retailers, as well as your local bricks and mortar bookstore. Feel free to ask for it at their desk. If they don't have it on the shelf, they can all order it. But I do see a lot of great reviews from the people who have ordered it on Amazon and spoken up and said, you know, this has helped my family, or this has been motivational and informative. And, you know, I'd like to hear those kind of things from readers, but it's so available out there at starting at $3.03 for the ebook that I'd like to hear from the readers and like to be able to reach out to anybody who's struggling with these issues.
Cool. And Father's Day is coming up. It'd be a great gift for someone that's a father that you know that could benefit from it. Scott C. Stevens, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today.
Appreciate it, Rodney. Thank you.
We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, a little bit more before we go. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Mathers Rodney at yahoo.com gets you a direct line to me, MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Let me know how you're doing. Well, I want to thank my special guest today, Scott Stevens, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? Be sure you check us out right here next time on the Journey of Hope.